Oh, what's cracking, lovely people? Welcome to the Big Feed Up HQ podcast, episode 199. I'm closing in on 200 episodes. The podcast has been rolling for over 6 years now and accumulated over 60,000 listens so far, which is mega. The show is supported by 33 Fuel, who produce natural and powerful sports nutrition products. I'm talking about a daily greens powder that is a third of the price of AG1. Chia seed energy gels I've used in every single one of my ultras, protein bars and protein powders. Everything's plant-based, natural, and they're honestly fantastic. Head to the link in the show notes for 15% off or use code MattGardnerNutrition at checkout. Follow the link, that's the easiest way. And let's learn about today's guest. So back in 2019, James made the jump from employment, where he used to work in the supplement industry designing protein powders, and founded Nutrition for Energy. James works with clients in a collaborative manner, empowering them to make great nutritional choices that will improve their health and performance. Recently, James completed the Dragon's Back. Unbelievable. A legendary 380-kilometer, 6-day ultra running journey through Wales. I'm really looking forward to digging into the race and James's business and philosophy. So let's get into today's episode. Let's get into today's episode with James Hudson from Nutrition for Energy. James, welcome back to the show, mate.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you, Matt?
Oh, I'm good, mate. I'm so excited to talk to you. We actually had James on the show. We were just reminiscing before we started. I think it must have been 3-4 years ago now. You started the business, didn't you, in 2019? I can't even remember how we connected, but we did, obviously, and I had you on. So now we can, I think, reintroduce you. And obviously, I want to get into the challenge, the running challenge that I introduced in the intro, the 380-kilometer ultra marathon. And he's still standing, so I can see him, lovely people. Don't worry, he's not like deformed and crippled, he's actually probably thriving. So a lot to unpack, mate, but yeah, what's going on with you and Nutrition for Energy? Give us a bit of an update.
Well, when we first connected, it was probably a couple of months into the start of the business, and I started off doing body composition analysis with skin folds and then guiding people with one-to-one nutrition consults to improve their nutrition and then see favorable outcomes in their body composition. Then lockdown happened 6 months after, so actually going and doing body composition assessments wasn't really able to happen. So I ended up moving the business online and focusing more on nutrition. And then when lockdown, or when we came out of COVID and came out of lockdown, I stayed with just the nutrition side of things and was really just focusing on that one-to-one, and was growing products I call monthly coaching, where instead of just having one-off conversations with people interested in sport, it was actually, right, how can we talk each month and then really look to build habits. So that my philosophy is that I'm not going to try and coach you forever. We're probably not going to be working with each other this time next year, but in 5, 6, 7 months, however long, and I'll never try and force nutrition down people's throats who don't need it. Like, if we can get to where they want to be in 3 months, then fantastic. But it's always to try and build those habits and instill through knowledge and education, well, this is how you can fuel around training. This is how you can eat to recover. So instilling those sport nutrition best practices into people who train really.
Do you look after the clients you look after? Are they all doing sport or athletic endeavors, challenges, things like that too? Or do you get people reaching out to just improve their, you know, food relationship, practicality around nutrition, a bit about body composition? How's that been going? I suppose, have you narrowed down on a client base, or do you still keep it quite broad to help as many as you can? How have you been finding that over the years?
I found it has evolved over the years. And initially, it was just people in your network, because your network's not that big when you first started the business. And if word goes round that you're a semi-competent nutritionist and you're getting results with people, then whatever their goal, you want to help them because you're looking for new clients. But then as you get busier and you're able to be a bit more selective with your time, you realize that actually what my background and what my speciality is helping people who train. So although I do still have a few clients who don't train very much, I'd say they're in the minority, it's probably 10%. Most of my clients are probably wouldn't describe themselves as athletes, but I probably would. They're training 3+ times a week. Some of them are age group triathletes. Some of them are really pushing hard for top end performances. And then some are doing crazy challenges. So I've got some sort of channel swimmers and other people pursuing ultra endurance. And I found that the more I train in a certain event, the more clients you pick up in that area, just sort of naturally, really.
Yeah, perfect. And, you know, are you at the moment still taking on new business? Like, I can obviously say 100% that over the years, if I've changed roles and done other things and people have come to me for sports nutrition inquiries, you know, I've referred to you, mate, because obviously trust what you do. You're in it 100%. You know, you're not just doing it part time and focusing on other things. You know, you're totally dedicated, and you're someone who obviously, as we'll get into, you do challenges, different types of challenges over the years as well. So you've got this breadth of knowledge around ultra endurance, strength, triathlons. So you've covered a lot, mate. You've covered a lot. So how are you finding that juggling, you know, client base, customer base? I'm sure there are a few like budding nutritionists listening to this, and a lot of people in our network who listen to this who are running their own nutrition business. So yeah, how are you finding all of those little bits and juggling the client base and taking on referrals? And do you open up slots for your monthly coaching, or do you have other programs and things that you do certain times of the year that you can obviously talk about and then fill the spaces and get on with? It's interesting to hear.
Yeah, so I found trying to step back and think, right, how do I run this more as a business instead of a hobby? And I think in the first year, I was just so excited by getting some clients. And I was like, right, when can you talk? And I was like booking in as and when. And then suddenly you get busy and you realize the work-life balance shifts. Mm-hmm. So trying to be smarter and say, right, well, this is when I work. How can I book clients into that? And then something that's very interesting is I had no real background in business. I did sport and exercise science and then sort of moved into sport nutrition. But I actually worked with a business coach for a year.
Wow.
And that was hugely educational, because I learned about the numbers. You learn about what you want to, or how many leads you need to get to have X many clients. And that then ultimately allowed me to serve my clients better, because I wasn't spending loads of time in the nitty gritty. If you're able to be like, right, this is the plan, mm-hmm. This is how you execute it, then you have more time to work with your clients. So that was why I evolved the coaching business to have weekly check-ins. And I always tell my clients, it's not because I don't think you could do it, and I'm checking in because you're the accountability. I don't like that. So when I do check in on a Monday, so I check in on WhatsApp on a Monday, and we have monthly conversations on Zoom, but check in on a Monday, and that's just to have a touch point. It's a form of reflection.
Nice.
So it's an opportunity for them to ask questions and be more engaged in the coaching process. But then now I've blocked out my Mondays from having coaching client calls, so I can actually dedicate more time to those messages and responding and be proactive and ultimately see better results with clients. So I think stepping back from the day-to-day and just the doing consultations and putting more time into the planning and evolution of the business, I suppose.
Wow.
And that's kind of where I want to take the business next year. So it's looking at how I can further improve that and then look to scale. So I'm kind of currently in a process of stepping back again and saying, right, how do I improve the service even further?
And what's your, it's probably quite a loaded question, but what's your relationship like, mate, with the social media side of things? That's quite box of tricks, isn't it, in a way? But also you're very transparent with your content, so I'll direct everyone to your Nutrition for Energy, aren't you, on Instagram? Is one
yes,
of the main ones.
Nutrition.4.energy.
Perfect. And I'll put that in the show notes. And you know, it's real, isn't it? You've converted your the space we were talking about before we came online, your office, and now, you know, you do a lot of production and things out of there. You're picking topics that people who are into exercise and sport want to hear about and know about, with hydration and other things. But I suppose it's then the challenge around video editing, isn't it, and making it catchy but still trying to be evidence-based. I was doing a podcast with Liam from PH Nutrition, and he asked me a question about it. And I'm first to admit that I haven't gone down the rabbit hole pushing my own personal services through social media. So I'm very much a fly on the wall watching, you know, great practitioners like yourself trying to do it. So how is all that side of it going as well?
It's very much a learning curve, and it's very much it's never going to be perfect. So get something out and learn. and not being scared to make a fool of yourself. I remember doing some stories. I think I did one story where I spoke about the fiber content on some, I think it was some pasta, some whole grain pasta. I was explaining something. And then I had a couple of messages back from some people saying, well, that's because that's uncooked, mate. And it's like, oh yeah, made an error there. But it's okay to make those errors. And then you just sort of accept them and say, look, I made an error here. And you're not going to be perfect all the time. But hopefully the majority of your content you can get right. So I've been trying to do more reels, as Instagram's all about reels lately. Personally, I don't like going on Instagram. So although I follow some people, I don't like spending lots of time on the platform. So I'm trying to put things out there, but then it's difficult to have the balance of putting things out there, but also then you kind of need to interact for the algorithm. So I think if it was just down to me and not the business, I probably wouldn't be particularly active on Instagram. And I made the decision about a year ago where I was doing lots of stuff just for the business, and I got really tired of it, and I thought, I'm just going to not do Instagram. And then I came back on and thought, actually, why don't you talk about what you're doing personally? Because I've set myself up a challenge, and I literally love getting into the nitty-gritty of an endurance challenge or some sort of fitness challenge. I thought, instead of talking about, oh, well, just, you know, what you think you have to do to get clients, and actually just talk about something I enjoy. And I think that came across a lot better and much more natural. So it's just trying to let a bit of an insight into what I do and then still try and provide some benefit to clients through that.
Yeah. It's probably something that I'll wake up and a lot of the times, mate, obviously, because I'm always following the page, you'll see the content that you're producing most days or most weeks. And it just, yeah, it's a nice thing to watch, and you're going through topics, but also, like you said, you're relating it to things that you're doing. And then obviously, as we dovetail into this most recent challenge, the Dragon's Back side of things. So there'll obviously be people listening who do know you and know that you've, you know, you're a very active person and you keep yourself obviously extremely fit. But what was the transition into this? I think you'd done a ultra running before, then you started entering longer single day races, hadn't you? But then you've still got the foot in the door of strength training and lifting weights. So how did that all come together? Obviously, that's a loaded question, but maybe just a bit of a transition athletically and the things you enjoyed. And then obviously now we can then dive into the race and the Dragon's Back race. There'll be some people who have probably never heard of it, and I think it'll be an awesome story to get into.
Cool. So you're right, a bit of background. I had done a few endurance things. I had done an Ironman and done some marathons in the past, but then I got into CrossFit in quite a big way, and I still love all the strength side. Then lockdown hit and I thought, right, I want to do an ultra marathon. So that was my first ever long distance run. I did a 40 miler and then a 100 miler in the same season. And after that, I thought, oh, that's probably scratched the ultra running itch for a bit. I'll move back into fitness and CrossFit especially. Then, I don't know, I was actually one of my old clients sign up for the Dragon's Back race, which is this 6-day adventure in Wales. And I thought, actually, and it maybe took me about a week or two to realise and work out what my emotion was. And I was thinking, actually, I'm quite jealous. So I signed up for that. And that was in September last year. And so I basically had a year to mull it over and plan. But when I trained for the 100 miler, I just ran because it was at a time when the gyms were shut in COVID. And I lost quite a lot of muscle mass, and I don't know if it's ego, probably is, but I felt like I lost some of my identity because I dropped from about 83, 82 kilograms where I sit naturally down to about 76. And I was quite sort of a bit skinny, a bit thin, quite gaunt, more of a runner's build, which probably helped, to be honest, for the 100 miler. But I thought, right, as I sign up for this big ultra running challenge this time around, I'm going to try and maintain weight, maintain muscle mass. So I actually set myself the goal of, instead of just trying to complete this race and run and build volume, I'm actually going to track my body composition and work with a strength and conditioning coach in the gym and combine the two and try and maintain or even build muscle mass whilst getting enough running volume in my body to be able to run for 6 days and run the length of Wales.
Wow. Got a lot to unpack there. How many times do... prior to the event, we'll get obviously into the event in a bit, but to obviously travel there and recce, you can look at things online and obviously you can run around the terrain where you live and if you're going on holiday and running around there and things like that too. But how many times did you go there prior to the event to do, you know, some of the route?
Not enough is the answer to that.
Yeah.
That was one thing where I kept thinking, wow, it would have been quite good to have run more of this type of terrain. Because I live around London, basically. I'm on the outskirts of London. So
yeah.
Most of the race is in around Snowdonia and Brecon Beacons.
Mm.
In answer to your question, I went twice. So actually, no, that's a lie. I went 3 or 4 times. So I did a weekend running up in Snowdonia around Snowdon area. We did a big loop of the horseshoe. And that was right at the start. And actually, it's quite funny because we was driving up there with another ultra running friend and we hadn't planned a route or anything being runners. But from London, we thought, oh, well, we'll do about a marathon distance and I want to get some elevation in, having no idea really what the type of elevation would be like. So on the first day of the Dragon's Back race, it's a 50-kilometer run. Well, it's about 55-kilometer, but it's almost 4,000 meters of elevation. So on this recce, we went up there and I found a race called the Snowdonia Sky Trail. It was on all trails. And it was a marathon distance, but it had almost 4,000 meters of elevation. And I thought, oh, great, this will be perfect. You know, I'll just work out what that kind of race would be like. And we left the car, everything packed, and I was expecting it to be about 6, maybe 7 hours, because sort of just parked it on. Well, no, it's going to be like a marathon, but it's a bit slower because it's pretty hilly. And God, we got to 30 kilometers, so we got 3/4 of the way around. It was about 8 hours, 8, 9 hours, and it was dark.
Wow.
And we had to get a taxi back to the car just because it takes so much longer, because you can't really run on that kind of elevation, especially over that short distance.
Wow.
You're hiking, and you're not hiking particularly fast. I was wishing I had poles. You're climbing in places, because it's just so steep and the terrain is so treacherous, you're sort of hopping between boulders. So that was quite an eye-opener on that first recce. And then I had another weekend where I ran some of the Dragon's Back route on day 5 in the Brecon Beacons. So day 5 is one of the very long days. It's about 70, just over 70 kilometers, but with very big elevation as well. So I ran about almost 50 kilometers of that just to get a feel for duration and the terrain. And yeah, that was also quite eye-opening. I was sort of thinking, oh, how long have I got, and how am I going to actually be able to do this?
Yeah, and you can, lovely people, I'll put James's Instagram handle into the show notes and things, and obviously look up Nutrition Frenzy, because I think you have highlights, don't you, of each day. And you recorded a lot of content. I followed you, mate, to be honest. I was fanboying a lot. Every day I was on your tracker and just seeing the timings, and then obviously just like willing you, and you did, you obviously performed incredibly well, and you would, but just making sure, you know, you were getting in between the cutoffs, looking at the length of the days and the content that you were putting out. And then obviously you put out a lot of content afterwards, so you must have recorded it during, but, you know, kept it to yourself. So people can literally go on there and look at the blow by blow. One thing I want to pick up on, though, and it's interesting if you are listening to this and you're getting into running, especially road running, it's a massive solo pursuit. That's obvious, and ultra running is the same. But you went into that recce day with a friend, didn't you? And then obviously during the event as well, you're not just running on your own. Times you are obviously on your own, head down, it's tough slog, it must have been. But the community, isn't it, is the interesting thing, and the ultra side. Even the guys that were probably at the front, they're probably still having conversations with you, aren't they, in the campsite. And, you know, they're looking to win the thing, but everyone still gives you a lot of time. And I can see some of the content. You're in groups, different groups each day, maybe some of the same people at some time. So how do you find that? And is it, you know, it's a nice way to encourage people to try some of the trail running, because the community are very open, aren't they? And it's not always about running fast and split times and, you know, making sure it looks really good either. So yeah, how was that side of the race and meeting people?
It was super fun, because everyone that does something like that, you've got something in common. You're a little bit wacky, you're a little bit crazy, just want to do something like that. Also, you've got running, you've got fitness, you've got health sort of as your priorities. What was quite interesting, though, is that it's quite difficult to run with people for long periods of time, what I found, because my pace was quite erratic. And I think because I'd done that process of building muscle mass, and I fortunately achieved that, but it meant I was probably one of the heavier athletes. So going uphill, I was a lot slower than most. So the lighter guys tend to just fly up the hills. But then because I had quite strong legs, I was faster on the downhills than they were. So if there's times on the flat, or if you find someone who's going slower in a long section of up or downhill, you can run together. But actually, I wasn't running with people for huge sections of time, because although you're, it's not, I mean, it is a race, but you're just trying to sort of, I was just trying to complete it, really. And you're not necessarily going all out and trying to beat your time. You can run with people. I was finding that I was sort of taking off on the downhills, just because for me, running fast on the downhill, that's just pure pleasure. And I was, as well as happiest. So I'm happy to run that on my own and bounce along. But then on the uphills, people would take off. So there was a fair amount of time on my own.
Wow.
However, you're right, when you get into camp, you chat with everyone, you get some food, you just sit down at a table and everyone's got a story to tell about their race.
Nice.
I was fortunate that during some quite difficult climbs, and where, I mean, you have to navigate on this race. I was doing it all via a watch, but there was people with maps and stuff. So I would normally try and keep someone in the distance. And then if I'm thinking, God, I have no idea where I'm going, I might try and just run and catch up with them and then just hold with their pace regardless of where I want to be, because there's also times where you just want to have a bit of company and chat. And I think it was one of the days, probably day three, where it was slightly flatter on some of the second half of the day, and I ran with someone for a couple of hours, and it was just, that was actually one of the highlights, because we were just chatting away and time absolutely flies.
And the weather, obviously, it was hot, I think. Maybe too hot for your for your race, but I suppose at least it wasn't torrential rain and cold. But I suppose the heat, I know I would have, well, I'd have struggled regardless, mate, because listening to one of the days, I've done a marathon that had similar elevation in Italy, and it was a one day, and that's the hardest thing I've ever done. So you know you did more than that on day one and had another 6 days, so I couldn't imagine it. But the heat for someone who's obviously quite a sweaty person, I think that's, you know, I'm happy to be able to say that about you, and we're quite similar, and I would have done the same as you probably. I think you like had a short haircut, didn't you, and you're wearing kind of minimal clothing, and you think actually he's not just trying to look good, he's actually needing it because he's just pouring with sweat. So I am keen to spend a few minutes on the nutrition and hydration tactics, but I suppose the elements and the nav, you know, you're never 100% prepared for, are you? So that, again, that's part of the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was very, very glad I bought one of those boonies hats from like Bro Clothing. So I had this massive peak and I was exceptionally surprised how little people had that type of hat. People just had little caps or nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons not as many people completed, just like, wow, getting some shade. It was absolutely fundamental, and I think that cap saved my race. But it was a last minute purchase the week before, and managed to get up to Wales a few days early, and we're just looking at the forecast thinking it's just absolute sun and the temperatures are always creeping up. But then you're right, the flip side of that is you have beautiful views, like you get to the top, you've got fantastic visibility. So I mentioned, like, it's very, very open. There's very little running through woods. You can normally see quite far ahead.
Wow.
You normally see this sort of like snake of people along the way, so you can normally see where to go. But the heat did mean, and combined with my sweat rate, I had to drink a lot. And again, I think that's where some people went wrong and didn't get enough fluids in, or didn't have the right solution in their fluids, and that crippled their race. Because wow, the dropout was significant on this race.
Wow, wow. So yeah, so it'd be good to go through, give us like, obviously you don't have to go through all 6 days, but maybe, you know, a time you got up on one of the days, and obviously being a practitioner and experienced nutritionist as well, I'm sure you'd have planned everything down to a T, but you probably would have had to be agile and take advantage of what was offered food and drink wise, you know, at camp. So it'd be cool to get a few minutes on. Yeah, choose one of the days. I know I'm putting you on the spot a bit, but maybe it's etched into your mind and you'll never forget it. But it'd be cool to understand what you'd planned, and then how it unfolded, and how you were probably intuitively eating and drinking as well. But it's probably worth mentioning you were quite good at doing a body composition analysis, weren't you? And I think you did a sweat test, didn't you, too, prior to the event. So again, that's something I can send out information to, or if listeners want to get into contact with you about those things. We don't necessarily have to go into those in detail, but you were quite aware of how salty of a sweater you were. And then obviously you're quite aware of muscle, lean muscle mass, and your weight and things like that. And I suppose figuring out grams of carbohydrates and foods, you know, roughly that you needed, weren't you?
Indeed, yeah. So I worked out a lot of that stuff in training, and I did that sweat sodium test. So I found out that I'm a high sodium sweater. I actually had the exact number in milligrams, and then I built my hydration plan around that so that I knew how much sodium I'd have coming in. Actually, though, it was quite difficult to manage because the amount of extra fluid I was having. So you'd be picking up a lot more water, and then you're trying to then work out a little bit on the fly based on how many electrolytes you need. But gauging that, and you're right, it's always about drinking to thirst because you don't want to overdo it. But the thing is, you're just always thirsty when it's that hot. And the amount I sweat, I was probably sweating in excess of 1.5 litres an hour.
Wow.
Just, it's absolutely pouring. And I was kind of embracing that because I was thinking, hey, this is my cooling system. So it's absolutely just, you can feel all the drips pouring down your face. And I wasn't even wiping them off because I was just thinking, it's helping with evaporation here. To give you a start of the day, so maybe do day two.
Cool.
So you'd get up, you're allowed to leave camp, you're allowed to start running at 6, so you're allowed to start running at 6 a.m. So most of the, you'd start hearing alarms going off in camp, in the tents next to you from 4 o'clock really.
Wow.
So you hear people at 4, half 4. I think I set my alarm on the day two for 5 o'clock. Because I thought, actually, I had quite a successful day one. I don't need to leave bang on 6. I can probably get away with leaving at 6:30. So then get up, and I'd written this checklist. And that's something I would highly recommend people doing these type of events do, so that when you're getting up a little bit, or a bit dazed, you can just go through your checklist. So it's things like making sure you've got the right clothes on, you've got your sun cream on. Okay, have I now gotten to eat? Have I packed my bag? Just all that sort of basic, call it camp admin. I would make sure that I had a nice hot chocolate to start, just so that I've got an opportunity to have something warm in the mornings. Obviously, even though it's hot, having something at 5 o'clock in the morning just to warm the bones a bit is nice. And I would also put a fair bit of sugar in that, just because it's easy to get that kind of carbohydrate down. It's low fiber. I was then quite specific with my breakfast. It was all vegetarian, but they had options of cereals. They had some cooked stuff as well. So there was things like baked beans, hash browns, veggie sausages. I avoided that mostly. I always went for a big bowl of cornflakes with dried fruit. So basically just carbohydrate, and had some milk on that. And then through the latter days, I actually added a hash brown on top and smothered that in Marmite just as a way of getting more sodium in.
Nice.
So that was my breakfast. And then you finish up packing your bag. You have to do kit check. So there's minimum kit requirements that you have to take. So they might say, oh, can you show us your compass or something like that? And then you provide that, and then off you go. So I was probably leaving camp between 6 and 6:30 most days. I was then following my nutrition plan pretty religiously, which was eating every 45 minutes.
Wow.
And I had calculated that with the fluids I had on, as well as the nutrition in either mix of gels or whole food, I would have bang on 60 grams an hour. And that served me very well throughout the whole thing. So I stuck with that. I did regret having quite dry, because I wanted to have a mix of savory and sweet and gels and stuff. But I had sort of Ritz crackers as well as these Love Corn products. And they were so dry that with the dehydration that is to be expected and is okay to have, your mouth's quite dry, so you put it in, it just turns to dust. So they were quite difficult to get down, but I would normally just swill them around with some fluid in my mouth and have it almost as a paste, which wasn't particularly enjoyable. But it's just, I knew I had to keep doing it to be able to get the energy in to keep going. So the Dragon Back race was great as well, because they put on ice lollies at certain checkpoints.
Oh, cool.
After running 30K in 28 degrees uphill, being presented with an ice lolly, regardless of what kind of lolly it is, it's absolutely incredible.
Wow.
So those were always taken, and I didn't factor them into my nutrition plan. I'd just eat them on top of something else. So I may have had a bit more, but they were incredible.
Wow.
Then you get in, and when you get back into camp, I had a plan of trying to refuel immediately with some mainly carbohydrate-rich foods before getting into starting the recovery process with more whole food. And that was intentional because after running, your sympathetic nervous system go, go, go. So you're not very well primed to digest complex food in the hour after. So I went in again, my hot chocolate with as much sugar as I could get into it when after finishing. And I actually had a protein shake as well, because that's easily digested on the stomach. Then did all my camp admin, probably about 90 minutes, and then we'll go to the food tent. By that stage, I'm a bit calmer. My body's a bit more ready to eat. So I'll just have a big bowl of something. And again, it was all vegetarian. So they had meals like veggie cottage pie. They had some veggie curries.
Wow.
I tried to avoid huge amounts of the lentil elements, because they can be quite active on the gut. So I was leaning more into the carbohydrate elements. I didn't actually need to eat everything. There were people that were sort of going back for seconds and having absolute mountains full, but because I was so on it with my fuel enduring, I didn't necessarily need to get a day's worth of calories in on that day. Sorry, in that meal. I would then sort of wind down and you go to bed and you do it all again the next day.
So what? How much were you carrying in terms of weight? So obviously, you know, we don't necessarily have the time or detail to go into exactly how you packed your bag. And the good thing is now, if people are listening to this and they really want to understand all that, they can reach out to you, obviously, if that's okay. But I suppose you maybe more so than most, with your strength background, you were finding it okay to carry the bag. Like, it must have been quite a few kilos in your running back, and then you had must have had, you know, whatever, if a gram is the same as a milliliter, you must have had a liter or so on your person minimum. And then would you be filling up at streams, or would you just try to obviously wait for the aid stations to get fluid? So what was it, 3-4 kilos or even more you'd be carrying kind of on your person?
Oh, you're gonna laugh. So because it was so hot, I went quite big on fluids, because I knew I had a high sweat rate and I thought, I don't want to get low. And especially on the first day, I'll take more than I need and I can always then work it out moving forward. And the thing with this race is there's only 2 water stations. So there's 1 drop bag and there's 1 extra water station. And the rest, you have to go, yeah, waters, you have to go with streams and stuff.
Wow.
So I left on the first day with 5 liters of fluid on me.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's just 5 kilos on your back to start with, without all the mandatory kit. So I think my kit bag was so heavy. I sort of made a joke that you can tell the quality of the runner by how light and small their pack is. I probably have one of the biggest, heaviest packs going, so that probably tells you something about the quality of my running. But I had a 3-liter Camelback bladder, and I had filled in that a hypotonic sports mix. That's about 4% carb solution.
Wow.
Which was good, because that allowed me to get 120 grams of carbs in without fiber. And I also had my electrolytes in there, and then I had just water on bottles on the front, and then I had 2 extra bottles. I found that I didn't quite need that much, but I would always have had 4 liters, because if I was running on average for 12 to 13 hours, well, then the first checkpoint, if you split it into 3, is probably around 5-6 hours, maybe 4, depending on where it's spaced out. So if I'm having a litre an hour, you're going to get dry by the time, you know, 4 hours is done. In answer to your question about filling up, I did have one of those fancy bottles which would filter it.
Sure.
So I had one of those, and that was a saviour on one of the days. I didn't actually need to fill up because of the amount I was carrying. But the thing is, if you're running with a 3-liter bladder and you're running uphill and it's really hot, that doesn't stay cool for very long. So you're just running, drinking body temperature water, which isn't quite as palatable. So if you go past a cold stream and you're able to pick up, oh, having something cold is delicious. And actually what people are using the streams for more is just picking up their hat, filling it up with water and splashing it over themselves.
Wow.
And because it was so hot at some of the, like the main aid station that you'd have your kit bag at, they had a sort of gazebo thing so you could get some shade. But I was taking my t-shirt off, absolutely dunking it in a bin full of cold water, and then putting it back on just to reset my body temperature a bit, and then allow the body to calm down and get more fluids in.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's such an interesting insight into the hydration side, because that would definitely be something I'd need to consider.
I got into camp on day 1 and I saw someone in my tent and I thought, oh wow, he's done well, because he was stretching. I thought it was time to do that, but he was he placed 2nd in the whole race, and I asked him about his hydration, and he carried 1.5 liters on him. So compare that with my 5.
Yeah.
And he only had an extra 1.5 for the whole run. So he did, actually, no, that's I've got that litre wrong. So he did eight, it took him 8 hours on the first day, and he had 4 litres of water. So he was running with about 1.5 to 2, but obviously would be drinking that along the way, and his bag was very minimal, very small, and he was running like most of it. So that's how the top guys were doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you see some of these top guys, and you just don't understand how they can work through, obviously, their energy systems and their, you know, their cardiovascular VO2s, things like that, their legs for the hills. But on the same, I'm in wonderment how they can then function on the dehydration side, but they do. So, but you had to personalize it for yourself, and I would have been very similar.
And again, just a bit of insight on that, the dehydration side of things. So this might be too much information for some of the viewers, but I went to the toilet before the first day. So on the first day, went to the toilet before the race started. I then had one urination about 11 a.m. and then nothing else until I went to the toilet before bed at probably about 10 p.m.
Wow.
It was very dark. So it just shows the level of dehydration despite having drunk that much fluid.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, mate. That's such an interesting insight, because I think a lot of people would have, maybe we would have gone in, you know, to the detail around nutrition, but obviously it was all worked out. And you know, if people do want to grab a bit more information from you about, you know, the exact gels and the exact foods and things like that, then there's an opportunity to reach out to James, definitely, guys. So please do that. And it was just fascinating to go through some of those day-to-days, mate. So I suppose now, looking forward, have you got another challenge on the plate, or are you, you know, resting for a little while? Not resting, because obviously you're active all the time. But what's next? Is it then now focusing on continuing to grow the business into the new year? Or have you got another kind of challenge coming up?
I am resting, actually. I know you said I'm normally quite active, and I normally am, but I've taken almost 4 weeks off now. I'm just not really doing much, going out for short runs if I feel like it, cool, to help with my mood. But I think the stress on my central nervous system has been quite vast, and I've picked up a few coughs and colds just because your immune system's quite crippled after that. So I have really gone quite easy. In terms of upcoming challenges, I haven't got anything in the diary. My plan is to focus more on the business.
Nice.
And really, I thought if I can go into business and put as much effort and energy as I would into that as I do into some of these challenges, then it could be quite exciting as to where I want to take the business. So that's one of my plans. Although in the back of my mind, and don't tell the wife about this, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking it's nice to have something on the go. So I'm open to suggestions or ideas, but now I know that I like the adventure side of these sort of expeditions.
100%, mate, 100%. Oh, that's really exciting. Right, lovely people, we're back. Slight Zoom malfunction, but we move. So yeah, we're just rounding off around your challenges and things and what you're going to be doing in the future. So we could just maybe finish that for a couple of minutes. So are you still actively, you know, have you got spaces for the nutrition and coaching side of things? You've obviously added the Dragon's Back and things to your armory personally, but then that's probably given you, mate, such a wealth of knowledge around planning and executing nutrition for ultra distance. People listening to this, you know, to work with you, they don't have to be doing ultra marathons, do they? It could be a hypertrophy goal, gaining muscle. It could be like I'm doing one of these HYROX events soon. So you're seeing this rise of these functional fitness competitions. Is that something you're still passionate about helping people with, or are you looking more into the running side? Like, where is it all going?
Oh, for sure. Anyone that is following a loose plan, it doesn't have to be a structured plan, they don't have to be working with a coach, but someone working towards a goal where they're training an X amount of times, where we can then get into the fun stuff of sport nutrition. And if you can start like getting into the nitty gritty with things like carbohydrate timing, well then actually when you're training, you can feel great for that training session. You can get more out of that training session. And most of the time people are doing these think rents like HYROX, they're doing them for fun. But actually making sure you're well fueled means you're going to enjoy that session more. You're going to enjoy the event more because you've got more circulating blood glucose, for example. So you're just going to feel like you've got more energy. And if you're doing it for fun, well, then why make it feel like a slog? I don't like the expression or the phrase like the type 2 fun. It's more of an ultra running thing. But the people that go and do exercise and just do it because they like how they feel afterwards, well, I always say, well, what can we do that will make you feel like you enjoy it more? And normally if you get into the nutrition, well, then you're probably going to enjoy that session more. So Yeah, you're right. I'm taking on new clients at the moment. I had a batch of clients come through from Easter, and I've been working with them for 5 or 6 months, and a lot of them have got what they needed now, which is fantastic. So again, it's probably not a fantastic business model where I'm coaching clients that don't need me, but it does mean I get more powerful referrals because clients are happy to sing my praises. So I've got spaces at the moment, and I'm taking on new clients for monthly coaching.
That's awesome, mate. And maybe on a little bit of a side, knowing you used to work in supplementation and you probably get a lot of questions and things on that. And is that something you discuss with your clients too? And were you using certain supplements and things like that? Obviously, we don't have to go into brands, but I suppose from the sports nutrition side, it's always a hot topic. And knowing we're recording this in, October, heading into the winter. So how do you find those kind of things, you know, both personally, and then is it something that a lot of your clients and customers ask about and you know, want to take themselves?
Oh, it's always a well-asked question. It's like, what should I be taking? Or the latest potion or powder? Like, what, is this any good? I've started taking this, is normally how it starts off. And you sort of want to question why. And it's like, oh, it's just been appearing lots on my Instagram feed. But as a SENR, registered sport nutritionist, you want to say, well, what is the efficacy? What's the evidence that shows that there's benefit here? So there is evidence for a few supplements, namely protein powders, because increasing, but that's not because just protein powder is going to do it. It's increasing your protein up to X amount. So it's the practicalities of being able to achieve a high total protein intake. Things like creatine we know work. Things like caffeine we know works. You mentioned coming in at this season, vitamin D is actually been recommended by the government now to supplement through the winter months. So you can get vitamin D in the diet. For example, if you had a load of mackerel or sort of mackerel-based fish pie or something, you'll be able to get 100% of your RDA for vitamin D on that day. But you're probably not eating mackerel. Or I learned this recently, actually. You can get mushrooms that have been grown in the latter stages before their harvest in sunlight and then get more vitamin D in them. So if you go into store, some of the varieties of mushrooms will have like vitamin D on them, so you can flip them over and look at the nutritional information and see how much vitamin D's in. But again, it's probably unlikely you're eating 100, 200 grams of mushrooms each day. So supplementing with vitamin D is going to make sure you're not below average. And it's not having more than you need. It's making sure that you're optimal so that you can then reduce risk of coughs and colds.
Perfect. Oh, cool. Well, yeah, it's just one of those things, again, where I think you do a bit of a discovery call, don't you, mate? So people can jump on and they're not diving in straight into the service, but they can understand, how you work, answering quick questions like supplementation and other bits, and then seeing if they have got challenges or body composition goals or just wanting to, you know, perform better in a certain sport or event, then they can have a chat with you, can't they?
100%. It's about building the relationship, because we're going to be working with each other for 3 months minimum. So it's about making sure that we get each other, we're on the same page, and you're understanding the route that we're going and why.
Cool. Excellent. Well, yeah, look, James, very transparent, lovely people. Everything he does online, from, you know, cooking and experimenting with the foods that him and his wife are doing in the evenings, with, you know, trying out certain supplements and brands. And I know you've been dabbling into, creating your own merch and things like that as well, mate. You've got hats and cups, and I'd use James's water bottle every day. And honestly, I fully endorse James's service as I've kind of moved further away from one-to-one nutrition in sports. You know, James is the first nutritionist I refer to. So basically, just check him out, even just to check out the adventure that you've obviously been on and on Dragon's Back, mate. So yeah, thanks so much for your time. I know you need to scoot off and jump on some calls at midday, so it's been perfect to have a conversation with you. And if there's anything else, I think you've got obviously website, Instagram, all the info on the Dragon's Back and things are in there. Anything else you need to signpost the listeners to, or is that
I'll just give it a bit of direction. So if you are interested in seeing the bit of the journey through the Dragon's Back, then on the Instagram, if you look at the highlights section, so there's a highlight for each day, so you can click on day one and then you get a feel for the ins and outs of what that event was like.
Amazing. Cool. Brilliant. Definitely do that, lovely people. And again, thanks for listening. If you like the show, please share it with someone and just reach out to James. Honestly, I say this about all of my guests. Reach out, We're very helpful. We'll always offer our time. And if you're a great fit, then I think, you know, you'll do really, really well in trying to just up level your nutrition. Cool. All right. Bye.
Cool. Thanks, Matt.